Hello and welcome to the third episode of the Wolfpack Podcast. My name is Jake, and I'm going to be taking you through basically how I feel about the two spinoff movies that we have so far. I realize in the first episode, I talked about, and I kind of ranked all the movies. I know I didn't talk about the spinoffs because I treat them as, a separate entity, as they should be. It's kind of the point. And, so I don't actively see them as a part of the story, which to me is, the story is the Skywalker saga. So I don't see these two as important. I guess if that sounds good or not. I just view them separately, so I don't usually include them in a listing. So, I wasn't really originally thinking about talking about them so quickly. Like, I thought maybe I'd do like an episode each on them, but I decided to do this like 20 minutes ago and just scribbled down some notes again. So just because I have a lot to say, but at the same time not a lot to say, just some of the things I like, some of the things I don't like, and I didn't want to forget anything. With the rest of the movies, I'm probably going to actually watch them and take notes, and then I'll be able to do a full video or episode on each of them. So I think that'll be more in depth, a bit more to warrant a full episode on one movie, that kind of thing. So before we get started, want to remind everyone that we are available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, as well as a few others that I really need to write down so that I can plug them. But if you want to follow me on either of those, or look me up on whatever your preferred podcast listening device or platform is, and we'll see where you can. Okay, let's just get into this. This is going great so far. Okay, first one, Rogue One, came out year after The Force Awakens. And, when Force Awakens came out, I probably was never as excited for a movie than I was for The Force Awakens. So I was, and I loved it, so I was riding high on Star Wars. And I was, what a time to be alive at that point. I was the happiest, what a great time. But I'll admit, when Rogue One was coming out and seeing more stuff about it, I really wasn't that hyped for it. It was weird. I have a coworker would be like, "Are you gonna see Rogue One at midnight?" I was like, "Nah, I'll see it eventually." I don't know what it was. Something about it just wasn't doing it for me, I guess. And then when I saw it, eventually, I think I saw it maybe, it was probably almost a week after it came out was when I actually saw it. Probably the longest I've ever waited to see a Star Wars movie. But, because I had heard good things, so I was like, yeah, obviously I'm going to check it out. So, I remember when I saw it, I did not like it. When I first came out, I was like, that was kind of, it was alright. Initially, I didn't expect a lot, but it didn't really do it for me. And I guess my level of unhype was warranted. And that's kind of how I felt about it for a while. Then when it eventually came out and I rewatched it, I was like, wow, that's really good. And now I like it. I like it a lot more than when I first saw it, but it's still, it's not the best, but it's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's right in the middle, I'd say. Right in the middle around there. I want to talk, I'll still say the things I don't like first, which there aren't a lot, but what there are is I think they're pretty important. Like, right off the bat is, boy, are the characters just not likable. the exception of, like, K2SO, who is just a fun droid, voiced by Alan Tudyk, who I love. He's just fun, so he's good, and I like him. And I like Charut. I don't remember his last name, but he's the played by Donnie Yen, who I love. So, and he's just cool, because he seems like he's obviously Force-sensitive, but doesn't have the training, so he's just raw, and is doing the absolute most he can without training, and I find that really interesting. And he's also just likable. Like, when they initially get taken by, I don't remember his name. Forrest Whitaker, guy from Rebels and Clone Wars. Forrest Whitaker's character, and they're taken by his people, and they bag all their heads, and he just goes, "Are you kidding me? I'm blind." That cracked me up every time. That's pretty good. But I like K2, Charut, and I like Baze a bit. He's Charut's kind of bodyguard. He's got the big gun, but even then, he's less of a character than the two of them. But he's just, I don't know, he's a little bit more likable than, like, everyone else. Jin is boring. She flip-flops from not caring about the rebellion to then being like, "Oh, I'll die for it because the Empire killed my dad," even though it was kind of the rebels on their attack. And Cassian, who I'm interested in, he's not likable, but I'm interested in him. Which is, he's getting his own show on Disney Plus, so I'm interested in it, but he's just not likable. And the same goes for pretty much everyone else besides those. Like, I'll narrow it down to K2 and Charut as the characters I like. Everyone else isn't all that likable. I like Krennic, who's kind of the main villain, I guess, as I don't like Tarkin and Darth Vader, who aren't in it nearly as much to warrant being the main villain. I do like Krennic, just because, I don't know, he's kind of a slimy, evil dickhead, who is like, he just loves the Empire. He loves being evil. He is a space Nazi, and he knows it, and he loves it. And I like that. And he wears a cape. Who dares try to pull off a cape around Darth Vader, But, yeah, fuck. When Forrest Whitaker's character, I wish I wrote down his name. I don't much care for him either. He's just kind of there. It's cool that, they included a character from the cartoons in a live-action movie. That's the first time that's happened. And it's, he's there. But when they take Bodhi, the former Imperial pilot who has, the message from Jin's dad, they take him, and the boar gullet thing, that creepy alien that, reads his mind or something. What the hell was that? Why did that need to be in the movie? Was it just to kind of establish that Forrest Whitaker character is, not a great guy? Because we kind of get that vibe from just the rebels being like, oh yeah, he's kind of a radicalist. He's borderline terrorist. So, we don't really associate with him. But, what the hell was that? But otherwise, throughout the movie, the action is good. It's good Star Wars action. Lasers are popping off. All that good stuff. The last third of the movie is amazing. The battle on, I swear to God, I can remember all this crap when I'm not trying to, and it just, pops in there. But when I need to, it's ridiculous. But whatever, maybe it'll pop in there. But the battle The last third is amazing. I think that's the best space battle in the franchise, honestly. It's the best looking. I don't know. That's probably all the criteria you need for a space battle. But it's the coolest. I really like it. It's my favorite, I think. It's probably the one I watch the most. I'll rewatch. It's the only one I've like looked up on YouTube to rewatch exclusively. Like without having to rewatch the whole movie. So I think that's really good. The cinematography. This is a great looking Star Wars movie. Some of these shots are, you don't see this in any other Star Wars movie. Like when the Death Star is emerging over, I thought I could trick myself into remembering. It was peering over the planet and at the end, and Krennic sees it, and he just sees it over the horizon and the little dome where the turbo laser comes out, just like staring right at him. That's so cool. And you can see like the atmospheric distortion right on the horizon. It's really cool. But some of the shots throughout the movie are just incredible. When you really think about, when you think about cinematography and you watch it, you'll pick up the scenes that you're like, wow, that looks really cool. That's a really nice looking, really cool looking wide shot of the landscape, this giant planet destroying machine, you know, all that. It's just really cool. It's just really good looking. Yeah, we're gonna gush about Darth Vader's castle. Throughout the movie, whenever they go to a new planet, it'll say in the corner of the screen what planet it is. The only time that doesn't happen is when an Imperial shuttle is flying towards what appears to be a lava or planet that is on fire. Because you don't need it. You know what that is. You know what that is. And it lands on the castle, and the dude, little crony dude, is like, Director Krennic has arrived. In the little tube with the Imperial guards around it. You're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. When I watched it, I was freaking out right away. It's like, oh, this is what I love. That's what I need. Is just, you know, what Darth Vader does in his spare time. And we got that answer, and that is sit in a tube and just stare at where he got cut to bits and just stew in his anger and hate, which is so edgy, which I love. I love that crap, because Darth Vader is my favorite character. And you know what my favorite things about him is? When he's a beast and is just cool. So that, I was freaking out at that. I was like, that's the sickest. I love his castle. It's not the comic, the Darth Vader comic by Charles Soule makes it a little slightly less cool, just for the motive of it. Of he gets in that comic, it takes place like a year after Revenge of the Sith. So he's still pretty fresh as Darth Vader and still very mad at everything. And what it is, the Emperor gives him this ancient Sith mask, and he's like, this is cool, check it out, use it as like, not like a key, but like a guiding, I don't know, something. He's like, I want to give you a present. He's like, what do you want? He's like, I want a planet, give me Mustafar. And Emperor's like, are you sure? Why? All right, okay, fine. You can have Mustafar for whatever reason. And so he takes the mask, and the mask starts talking, and it'll attach itself. It'll make people attach it to them, and then the spirit of the Sith in the mask takes over them, and then it'll talk to Vader. And he tells Vader his, like, backstory. I mean, he's an ancient Sith and loved whatever. But he tells Vader that there's a way to kind of get to the afterlife and kind of interact, or, you know, basically he tells him, you can open a door to the afterlife and get your wife back, basically. But you need this conduit. You need to build a conduit to kind of channel all of this dark side energy into one spot and to open the door. And that's what the castle is what he's building the castle for, is to be this conduit to open the portal. And it takes like all this time. This architect, he builds it and then destroy it because it doesn't work. So they just keep rebuilding and crap. And when they finally do it, the mask double crosses him, and the spirit, or the actual Sith Lord, comes through instead and is like, "Ha, I tricked you, idiot. I'm a Sith, you dummy. What'd you think was gonna happen?" And then they fight, and you know, whatever happens. Well, obviously Darth Vader doesn't lose, because you know, he lasts in the movies. But I think that reasoning kind of lessens it. I don't hate it, but I think it takes away from, like, he just wanted a place to just be mad and become stronger with that. But either way, I love it. There's a Lego set and I really want it just because I love the castle. It's just so cool. But anyway, besides that, I kind of already talked about Krennic. The Death Troopers are an awesome addition. They look badass. They just look really badass. And you know, they're not just elite like stormtroopers. They're not just stormtroopers with a cooler armor and a more hardcore job. No, they're like literal super soldiers. Like, they're juiced up. They're all like evil Captain Americas. And like, yeah, they're all juiced up maniacs. It's really cool. So I love the Death Troopers. They're a great, great addition. And then I did like it. I think it was all right. Some people think it's not something that needed to be addressed, but I like that they kind of address the exhaust port thing. You know, it's in the Death Star plan, is like, there's an exhaust port there where if we shoot one thing into it, it'll blow up the entire station. And it's like, that's kind of silly. But no, exactly. They say that Jin's dad deliberately put it in as, you know, a way to be like, he didn't want to build it, so he made it with this imperfection so that it could be destroyed. So I kind of like that. I don't hate it. I think that works. It helps, I guess. Then we have, at the end, along with the great battle, and as all the main characters start getting picked off in the fighting, and like they all die by the end. I really like that. I like that they all die. You know, it's not, I don't want to say it's ballsy, because you know, they're not long established characters. They were these characters made for this movie, and that's it. So they all die. And I kind of like that. You know, they're not mentioned in anything else. These, you know, theoretically, if they had lived, they would have been like, yeah, you gave us the ability to destroy the Death Star. You're like heroes, like on the level of like Luke Skywalker. So having them all die kind of helps that. So I like that. And I also like that Jin and Cassian don't kiss at the end. Like, if they had kissed, that would have taken the wind right out of my sails. That would have been dumb. Which, you know, something I have issue with something with the Rise of Skywalker. I have an issue with a kiss in that, which is really pointless. But we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. And the final part of the movie is the Darth Vader corridor scene, where he just tears it up. And they make him a beast. The beast that he was always described as. And always, they made him scary. In the theater, I lost my mind. I audibly shouted. And just started giggling. Because it's so cool. And like the next day, I found out that the music that's playing during that on the soundtrack is called Hope. Because, you know, it goes right into the next scene. But I didn't know, if you slow it down, like it's this operatic, epic, like holy crap, Vader's going nuts. If you slow it down, or no, you speed it up, it's the Imperial March. And that's so cool. that's the best. I found that out and I was like, wow, that really puts it over the top to really amazingly cool. So That was really amazing. I really love when Darth Vader is treated like a big deal, when they make him scary, when they make him like this unstoppable force, which they do in that, and they do in the video game Jedi Fallen Order. But maybe we'll talk about that at a different time. So as it stands, Rogue One, it's not bad. It's not bad. It's not great. But it's good. When I first saw it, I didn't like it. Now I like it. It's right in the middle. I have a hard time trying to find a spot for it in like my rating, my list, but I'll put it right in the middle. And then, right after. The next year, we had The Last Jedi, which bummed me out. So I was, oof. And before that, there was announced that there was a Han Solo standalone origin movie. And right off the bat, I was like, that is a terrible idea. Han Solo is not a character that we need to know the backstory of. Han Solo is cool because he's kind of mysterious. And he's kind of, I don't want to say, well, maybe not mysterious, but he's kind of shady. Like, when you first meet him, he's obviously like a scoundrel. He's not a great guy. And you know, that helps. It's the same with Yoda. We don't need to know Yoda before the movies, because that takes away from it. That takes away the mystique. It takes away the, I don't know, it doesn't add anything more to me initially. For Yoda, I don't think it'll add anything more. We don't need to. He is, as a character, he is the old master, all wise and everything, and that's fine. We don't need anything more than that. And with Han Solo, I was like, he's the scoundrel, kind of ruffian, but with a heart of gold. And, you know, becomes a hero. And that was fine. We didn't need anything before that. And I was not excited for Solo at all. I was like, this could be good, could be bad, but I don't like that it exists. And I still kind of don't. When it first came out, it was kind of getting, obviously, the whole thing is that, oh, it didn't do well financially. First of all, it made double its money. I don't see how that's a failure. I guess most movie studios see a failure as not making, like, triple its money, which is ridiculous to me. But it made a profit. It made a good profit, but they still see it as a failure, which is mind-blowing to me. But I didn't see it, actually. I probably waited a little bit. I might have waited longer to see this than Rogue One, so that might not be true. I think I waited, it was at least a week before I saw it, after it came out, before I saw it. Because I was like, I was iffy on it, and then I heard that it was good. I was like, oh, now I actually really want to see it. So, obviously, I saw it, and I really like this movie. I think it's really good. It's not perfect. I would put it, if as a rough thing, I put it above Rogue One, but still kind of like upper middle, you know, somewhere in there, maybe upper middle, maybe just above Rogue One. I really like it. It's fun. It's a space adventure with no big stakes. And that is what I love about Star Wars. Star Wars is amazing the further detached you get from the main Skywalker story. Star Wars should be so easy. Anyway, I digress. I like this movie. I liked it. I still do. I've watched it more than I have Rogue One and Last Jedi, obviously, because I like it so much. But again, we'll run down some things that I like and some things I don't. There's not as many things I don't like right off the bat, I'll tell you. And some things that I don't like, I'll kind of come up as they come up throughout you know, when I'm talking about something I like and it's related. Anyway, I really like in the beginning with Corellia. I had never really seen Corellia before in any comics or books. I didn't, at least beforehand. I don't know if it had been shown or anything before in, you know, before this. So I didn't really know what to expect. I kind of imagined not an Alderaan kind of thing, where like Alderaan is basically like a painting everywhere you look. It's magical, it's wonderful, it's pretty, serene, all the majestic, all this crap. I didn't think Corellia would be exactly like that, but I thought it'd be pretty normal, you know? But from what I've seen and have what I know later on, Corellia is, you know, it's very much like a ship building planet, basically. Like most of the planet is like a factory, which is neat, you know. I like that it's like, you know, it's not the first planet that's like, oh, this is grubby, but I like where he started. And because he's not the only like prominent character from Corellia. Wedge Antilles is from Corellia too, I believe. At least he was. I don't know. Anyway, you know, it's fun seeing young Han. Initially, I wasn't crazy about the casting of Alden. That's his name, right? But seeing when he starts, like, when he starts acting, you're like, oh yeah, he's doing it. He's a really good young Han Solo. He's not doing a carbon copy of Harrison Ford. He's kind of doing his own little kind of cheeky kind of twist on it. It's hard for me to put into words, but I really like it. And I have it written down in the order of which they happen, basically. I didn't even watch the movie, but I've seen it so many times. I know the series of events. But I have all the things I like and don't like in the order of which they happen in the movie. So I guess I could just do that and basically run through the movie. In Corellia, when they get, he and Kira, who is Emilia Clarke, she's there. She's fine. When they're getting chased out and they have those creepy like space dogs or like the monster dogs or whatever, those are real dogs in costumes, and I think that's adorable. Because they're like behind the scenes pictures of the dogs in the costumes, but with like the big heads off. It's so cute. It's amazing. I love that. Practical effects. I love it. I don't have it written down, but because I just remembered it. The way Han gets his last name, you know, he's Han, basically, that's it. And then when he enlists in the Imperial Navy, he's like, Han Solo, because he's alone. When they did that, I was like, it's kind of dumb. And I still feel that way. His name could have just been Han Solo. Is it really that big of a deal? You know, but whatever. And it cuts to, what was it, 3 years later or something like that, on Mimban, and like the Empire is trying to take over this planet, and it's just this really gritty, kind of gross, it looks like World War I to me, with all the mud and the trenches, and it's all foggy and dark, and all the explosions and crap. It's really cool looking. I really like this part. I'm like, wow, I want a movie like this, or like a show like this. This is neat. And I like the idea of the mud troopers, which is, you know, the stormtroopers. And you'd think that they're like the basic infantry. They are not. If anything, they're like, I don't want to say the Marines, but I don't know. They're above infantry, at least, because the mud troopers are infantry. And that's pretty fun. I like that. I like that idea. There's one shot where initially when I first saw it, I thought it was an AT-ST like jumping over a pit, and it looked really cool, but actually on rewatching, it's just getting like dropped off by a ship. But still, it's really cool to see. Anyway, let me move on. Han gets captured because he meets Beckett and his crew, and he realizes, like, you're not Imperial infantry. You've just found those uniforms. You're posing. What are you doing? Should I report you? And Beckett is wearing, like, an officer uniform. He's like, oh, hey, Lieutenant, this dude's a bad guy. And he's like, ah, I knew it. Lock him up. And they're like, don't leave. And he's like, don't leave without me. I need to get out of here. And they lock him up. And they're like, feed him to the beast. And throw him in there. And it's Chewie. And he's chained up. And obviously he's being used as, like, kind of like the Rancor in Return of the Jedi. And I really, really love Chewie in this movie. Chewie doesn't get a lot of play in the rest of the movies. Like, he doesn't do a lot, you know? He's just kind of there. He's basically like Han's pet and the guy who they hand things to carry them. And he is mostly that near the end of the movie. But the initial, probably like first, you know, through the train heist and that up until... I think about it. It's most of the movie, actually. It's not until, like, really the end where he kind of just turned into, like, a walking suitcase. Like, Chewie, he's fun in this. He has a little bit of character. You can tell that he's snippy, but he's also, he really values loyalty. And I like that, but that's just kind of a tangent. But, you know, Han and Chewie, they devise a way to break out and all that, and they join up with Beckett and his crew, and they fly off out of there and whatnot. But I really like the way that they build, kind of establish the life debt thing and their friendship. Like with when they get off the planet and they're on the ship and they're showering, and it shows Han's feet and he's standing in the shower, and then Chewie's feet comes right behind him, and he turns around and goes, couldn't have done this separately. I just think that's funny. And then when they're formally introducing themselves, it's just really nice. Like, I feel like you don't see Han and Chewie being such good friends as you do in this one. It's weird, you know. Anyway, I really like Chewie in this. And when they're camping out with Beckett and his crew, like, I'm just gonna call them the crew, because they're in for like 10 minutes, you know. I literally remember her name like 15 minutes ago. Tandy Newton character. Val. Boom. Val, she's just there, you know. Same with Rio. I kind of like Rio. He's voiced by Jon Favreau too, and I like his little species, but, you know, they're just kind of there. And then Beckett kind of, like, here, boom, this is how Han got his blaster, the DL-44. It's like, did we need that? Did we need this to be a whole thing? I guess his blaster is, like, iconic and everything, but, like, I don't know, it's kind of weird. Was that really necessary? I didn't know in this one movie we were going to get literally everything that makes Han Solo. You're going to see how, you know, it's that kind of thing. It's just weird. But after that, the train heist. This is probably my favorite part of the movie. The train heist is dope. This is some cowboy crap, man. I really like it. It's really cool that it's, you know, this traditionally kind of, Western kind of heist thing. Archetypical action scene in a Star Wars movie with a Star Wars twist. You know, the blasters and the raiders and the speeder bikes and all that. It just looks cool. The music is great, by the way. When Enfys Nest and the raiders show up, their theme is amazing. It's dope. But, you know, in the train heist, you know, Val and Rio die, so there's Beckett's crew gone. Beckett is just there. I like Beckett fine. You know, he's alright. Whatever. So they're like, oh, we gotta check out, or we gotta hit up with Dryden Voss. It was Paul Bettany. And I found out that when Ron Howard took over directing the movie, Paul Bettany just, like, called him up. He's like, why don't I have a part in your Star Wars movie? And he's like, I got it. You can be the villain. Which, I mean, I think that's kind of wholesome. It's kind of cool. I would do that if I was had that kind of pull and was friends with a famous director, I guess. And he had a Star Wars movie. Boom. Put me in it, please. For the love of God. Anyway, I like Dryden Voss's office. When I first saw the movie, I was like, oh my God, I need a wide shot of his office. Because right off the bat, you see a full set of Mandalorian armor. You see what looks like a Sith holocron, which is a big deal. Like, I want to see more of this. There's some weirdo crap in there. And it's just cool. And they kind of allude, and then when they're talking, he alludes to like, oh, you know who I work for. You're like, okay. Anyway, so they need a ship for the Kessel Run. It's all about the Kessel Run, which I like. I get. Actually, initially I didn't like. Now I like it, obviously. But you need a fast ship. Kira's like, oh, I know a ship. And of course it's Lando. I think Lando doesn't get a lot or enough, I don't know the word, credit, I guess, for, you know, he's kind of, you know, like the trio. Each trilogy has the trio. You know, the OTU is Luke, Han, and Leia. Prequels is Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Padme. Sequels are Rey, Finn, and Poe. And I think there in each one, there's also kind of like the unofficial fourth member, like the main people. In the OT, it's usually Chewie, but you'd think it's Chewie, but I think it's Han, you know? Or what? I think it's Lando. I think it's Lando is kind of the unofficial fourth member of the main people, which doesn't make sense because, you know, he gets introduced in the last maybe half of Empire. And then, you know, he's just kind of, you know, he's doing the space stuff in Return of the Jedi. But I really like him. He's fun. He's suave. He's kind of like Han, but he's a little bit smoother. He's not as gruff. He's a bit more charming. And I think it's funny. And they kind of play that up in this. I really like Donald Glover as an actor, as an artist, as a musician. And I really like the way he does Lando. To be fair, he's just basically impersonating Billy Dee, which can be a good or bad thing. I like it in practice. In theory, I probably shouldn't like it, but when I see him, I think it's really cool. But, you know, I really like him as Lando. He pulls it off perfectly. I remember when he got casted, I was like, holy crap, you could not have done a better job. And that made me actually kind of excited for the movie. But anyway, with Lando, we get probably the most, what's the word? I don't want to say, the most divisive character in the movie is L337, is Lando's droid, who has the kind of personality or voice. It's voiced by a woman, so it's a kind of a woman droid. And she is kind of a weird, she doesn't shut up about droid rights, which is, you know, kind of funny if it's played for a gag, and it usually is, but I don't know. She's all right. She's right, for me, she's right on the border of being really, really annoying and being really funny. Right on the border. Sometimes she's funny, sometimes she's annoying. So I guess it's up to the viewer whether they like her or not. I'm indifferent most of the time. The way she's done is kind of creepy. It's like when she walks, she's got like really swivel hips and it creeps me out. I don't like it. And it's like implied that like Lando isn't in love with her. It's just weird. Less said about it, the better, I think. So that's kind of something I don't love, but whatever. And you know, obviously Lando has the Millennium Falcon. And they kind of try to get it in a game of Sabacc, just the card game, kind of like poker. But I like the card game montage bit. I think it's fun. You know, Lando cheats because he's a scoundrel. But I like the look of the Millennium Falcon at first. It's very sleek. It's got the front, and yeah, it's just really sleek. Apparently that front, you know, the Millennium Falcon has like the two spokes on the front, but in this it's like full, long, slender, and apparently that's the escape pod, even though there's a different one. I don't know, maybe that was a Han thing. He put it elsewhere. But that was something, I liked the look of it, but I initially liked it more before this, and I don't know if it was Legends or not, if it was considered officially, but the Millennium Falcon was basically like a cargo ship, in which, you know, it has the spokes on the front, and basically like a cargo, what's the word? A giant cargo bin, you know, kind of like what we have on cargo ships and that kind of thing. Kind of like that would go in between those two front parts, and it would like push it, and that's why the cockpit was not off to the side, because the thing would be in the front and then it would just like push it. So it was basically like, you know, a space semi truck, and I always liked that. It's just fun. But in this, it's kind of more like a Corvette almost, like a souped up giant Corvette, which makes sense for it to be in Lando's possession that it would be like that. But I don't know, I liked it being a semi kind of thing, but it was just a really good semi. But regardless, the plan for the Kessel run, when they're on the planet on Kessel, is fun. It's a good bit of fun. There's a really weird moment where I freaked out because Kira takes down this dude with some weird, crazy martial arts, and L3 is like, "What was that?" And she's like, "Teras Kasai." I lost my mind, because Teras Kasai is this martial art that was introduced in Star Wars Masters of Teras Kasai, which is a really bad fighting game from, I don't know, mid-late 90s for the PlayStation 1. It was really, really bad. So the fact that they brought that back and made it canon is hilarious to me. And it took me out of it for like a second. I was like, my God, what are we doing? But it made me mark out a little bit. Anyway, then they're off the planet and Han has to fly the Falcon. Initially it was Lando and L3 were flying. Now Han gets to fly, and Kira's kind of trying to help, but she doesn't know what she's doing. So it's like, oh, Han's flying the Falcon for the first time. Whoa. You know, it's fun. There's a little bit of a music cue when he gets in the chair. And they're flying through. The whole thing about, I really like it, the whole thing about the Kessel run is, you know, when Han first says it, he's like, the ship that made the Kessel run in less than 12 parsecs. When you think about it, it doesn't make any sense, because a parsec is a measure of distance, not time. So how could they have made a run in less than a distance? You know, that doesn't make any sense at first. But the way it's explained in this is that there's this giant maelstrom space storm around the planet, and the only way through is through this one tunnel, kind of trench, guided way that is, what was it, like 15, 14, something like that, parsecs long, and you can't get through it unless you follow that, so you can't make it in less than that. But when they are cutting through, the Empire shows up, because there's commotion and crap, so they have to cut through the maelstrom, so they're shortening the distance, instead of doing all these loops and stuff, just make a straight line, so it's less distance, less than 12 parsecs. I really like that, that's dope. That's amazing. I really like that they explain that. And it's cool. And it's a really fun action scene. And during it, they have to eject the escape pod on the front. So then that's why there's the two spokes. Kind of, I don't know what else to call them. The two things on the front of the Falcon. So, because the initial long, slender part is gone. Anyway, it gets just torn up and junk. It's a really fun scene. they have the cannon, but they have to fight off TIE fighters without it as well by doing cool maneuvers. And Han's really funny. He's like doing the, they're gonna do this weird like drag race drift with the landing gears on a, like a chunk. And he's like, learning this from my old pal. I don't remember his name. My old pal on Corellia, which he pulled off once. Then he crashed and died. It was pretty funny. It's better in there. I swear. I promise. It's really fun, and they have to do it also in a certain amount of time. So that's why they have to cut, because the fuel that they stole will explode if they don't make it to make it not explode. I don't remember the word for it, but they have to treat it so that it won't blow up, basically. So they do that, obviously, and everything's right in rain, and Lando's just looking at the ship, at the Falcon, and it's all tore up, and Han puts his arm around him. He's like, that's a really nice ship you got. And they're just looking at it. Han, Lando looks at him and goes, I hate you. And Han goes, I know. This is a cute, cute little fan service. It's pretty fun. But, yeah, then they have to give the coaxium, that's the fuel. It's like hyperdrive fuel, basically. They have to give the fuel to Dryden Vos, but the Raiders show up, and they're like, oh, we want it. Oh, we're not actually good guys. There's like a rebellion going on, and this can help the rebellion. Han's like, oh, I gotta do the thing. I gotta, I'm a bad guy. And they're like, no, you're not. Chill out. So they devise a plan to try to double cross Dryden Vos. And Beckett's like, I don't want no part of that. I'm gonna go to, if you survive, hit me up on Tatooine. The big shot gangster and all that. That's fun. That's cute. But anyway, hijinks ensue. Beckett comes back and is like, oh, I double cross you. And it's just this topsy turvy, just goofy crime crap. It was fun. And they fight. And Dryden dies. Beckett dies. And Han shoots first. And Beckett's like, good call. I would have killed you. He's like, yep. So they give the coaxium to the raiders and for the rebellion, basically. And Han's like, and they're like, come with us. He's like, nah, I'm a scoundrel, you know, you don't want me with you. And Kira's like, shut up. You're a good person. Come on. Anyway, but she's like, oh, we're gonna need a ship. And they look at all the jewels on Dryden's ship, and he's like, go save Chewie. And Kira's gonna skip or jump around this end, but she, takes the ring off Dryden's finger, and puts it in the thing, and the hologram comes up, and the hologram is like, where's Dryden Vos? And she's like, oh, he's dead. And he's like, I'm not gonna go through the whole conversation. It's Darth Maul. Darth Maul is back in a movie, in a live action movie. He got cut in half in Phantom Menace, which at this point was probably like 35 years ago at this point, which is, if you haven't seen the cartoons, it's probably like, what? But, he's in the Clone Wars, he was in Rebels, and it's really awesome in those. And this, I freaked out because I was like, holy crap. Initially, this got spoiled for me. I saw who was in this before I saw the movie. I was like, oh my God, I need to see this. So it's really cool. And he's still physically played by Ray Park, but he's voiced by Sam Witwer, who voices him in the cartoons. So it's really cool to see him, and he pulls his lightsaber, and it's not his lightsaber from Phantom Menace, because he didn't have that anymore, and Sam Witwer had to tell them that. So it's the lightsaber he has in Rebels, which is really cool. But either way, then Han's like, we're gonna take this, and the Raiders give them a little bit of coaxium, so it's a little bit of money, a little way to get around. And they track down Lando, and they do the Han saw that he was cheating before, so he takes his little card thing off his wrist in the game, so they play for each other, and that's how Han wins the Falcon. But, and then they're like, going to Tatooine, ho ho! But, and the rest is history. Solo is really fun. It's just a really fun space movie. I'd say it's barely a Star Wars movie, even though there'll be a time where I just more accurately get into how I feel the Star Wars movie feeling at a different time, but wow, this is a long one, isn't it? But you know, Solo is, it's just fun. It's a good time. It's entertaining. I don't know how to sell it more than that. I'm not as articulate. I'm not a movie critic. But I can say, as a very, very large Star Wars fan, that this is a good Star Wars movie. This is a good movie. This is fun. And it's entertaining. It's if I want Star Wars, but I don't need to pay attention, I put this on. Which doesn't make it sound very good, but it is. Because it makes me pay attention, because I like it so much. It's upper middle. Right below, like, the upper echelon of Star Wars movies. So it's a good one. That's probably all I gotta say for the spin-offs right now. They're mostly good. There's a lot of good, not as much bad, but it's not enough to like make them, you know, original trilogy standard, but they're up there. They're good. At least Solo is really good. Excuse me. I wish I had a better way to end this. But this was obviously, yeah, I literally decided to do this podcast or do this episode on this like 20 minutes before I started recording. So it's very disjointed. I wrote notes, but they are not very articulate. But oh well, that's kind of the vibe, the aesthetic of this podcast. I'm gonna put her on the spot right now and say that my fiance said that wouldn't it be fun if, you know, you had your fiance who doesn't overly know much about Star Wars and you told her this stuff to her face instead of just monologuing and talking to yourself. And I'm like, but I'm not talking to myself. I'm talking to people. It's like I'm teaching. Like when you teach someone, so you have someone to actively bounce off of. I'm like, that's a good idea. Do you want to be on my podcast? She's like, no. So I'm putting her on blast right now. Maybe one day I'll bribe her somehow. She's like, you gotta make it worth my while. I'm like, I'm in your life. That's all the reward you need. Okay. All right. My name is Jake. I'm on Twitter and Instagram, both at @Jake_Excelsior, all lowercase. I don't post anything interesting, but you get to know me a little bit better. Not sure what we're gonna do next time. It'll probably be something I decide on 15 minutes before I start. Or it'll be one that I dive into. Again, I mentioned it last time. I really want to talk about Ancient Sith because it's really cool. I don't know when I'll talk about that, but we'll get to it. And then I also want to talk about games and TV shows. And, you know, I do an episode on each movie. But I'm going to start release order, obviously. And I'll probably watch the VHS tapes that I have that I haven't seen. because those are the theatrical versions. And I'll be honest, I've never seen the original theatrical versions of these movies, which is almost blasphemous, but I'm really excited to. I just need a VHS player, but that's what I'm going to do at some point. we'll see what the next one is. I can probably hear my neighbors opening and closing their door. Okay, this is a really nice conclusion. I'm terrible at this whole thing. All right, this has been the Wolfpack Podcast. My name is Jake. See you next time, and may the force be with you.